Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hello, I'm Georgia Aguila. I'm an associate vice president with AECOM. That is a very, very large engineering and construction firm. I specialize in particular setting up project management information systems for large government agencies. So it's basically all of the technologies and tools that help project managers do their work more effective and efficiently.
That's super exciting, Georgia, and thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk all the great stuff that you're currently building within your organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Well, I started as what's called a scheduler, which basically meant that I interviewed the people who were either going to construct or design a project and mapped it all out in PERT diagrams, so that we knew when a project was going to complete. And then we used those notes and tools in order to monitor the progress of a project. And that quickly grew into using other types of tools and technologies to monitor the project controls world. So how much money is the project spending? Are we burning money too fast? Are we tracking the right documents? Are we situated in a way that we're going to avoid claims and lawsuits? And so as that grew, so did my career, and my love of project controls and technology just sort of kept it at the forefront of everything I did. Even when I took on other responsibilities, we always brought it back to technology.
Well, that's super exciting, and thank you for sharing some of that, which as a project manager by trade myself, I was, you know, in particular excited about this conversation, mainly around, you've mentioned what you're currently doing as far as setting up the systems for project managers to be successful and, you know, in the government sector in specifically, which makes it even more interesting because I can only imagine all of the hurdles that you guys have to jump through to set something up like that. Before we do that, tell me a little bit more about some of the trends or ideas in project management that excite you the most these days. What are you researching? What are you mostly optimistic about?
Well, there's this thing called no code building for project management, which is basically any application that instead of having to go get someone who's a database administrator or knows some sort of fancy language in the world, you know, like C++, we hear them mention out there. It's just average, everyday people are able to use these tools to make their life easier, whether it means setting up a little bot that reads your email and automatically replies to certain things or creates a workflow. So those kind of tools are really cool. The PIMS world itself, which is Project Management Information Systems, has a bunch of big players now, eBuilder, Kahoot, Procore, that really allow users to really customize their applications. So it's not like you're buying something off the shelf anymore and you just sort of force feed it into your process, but you're able to really customize it and make it better. And I suppose the other trend that I absolutely love, it's kind of like my favorite, is dashboards and these beautiful reports. And I think we all have this inherent understanding of how beauty is important and how we are visual creatures. And especially the higher up you get in management, you don't have time to sit and read a 20-page report on why a project has gone south or what the problems are in a program. But if you're given a quick picture, a snapshot that draws your attention, both because it's beautiful, but it's easy to read and chock full of information that really narrows down what you're trying to look at, that's really helpful. And those are fun because not only are they pretty, but they're useful.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point because as I was in project management for many years myself and leading PMOs, One of the, you know, ongoing challenges and opportunities for improvement that I saw was through stakeholder management, especially when we had those executive steering committees, visualizing data, dashboards, things like this for actual executive presentations that became of utmost importance. And I know how challenging that is as well, especially in project management world, so that not everything is so focused on just status updates, but also visualizing some of the data points in terms of the opportunities. Maybe share some more insight. What are the different types of tools that you recommend using for project managers, maybe those that are just starting out in the space when it comes to effective presentation or visualizing data? You mentioned dashboards. Anything that you can share from that perspective would be great.
Well, dashboards being the end result, that you could, and all of the tools that I've mentioned before, they have dashboards built in that capability. But aside from that, there's also Tableau, which is out there. Power BI has become a big player in the industry. It comes with most Microsoft Office 365 licenses. And really, like your average kid who just got out of college and takes to technology like a fish to water can figure out how to use it super fast and really develop these dashboards that they're also interactive. So it's not like you're just looking at a pie chart, but you're looking at a pie chart that if you click on it, it automatically filters everything else in your view and changes your perspective. And I've seen grown men who have been in the industry for what feels like 100 years act like giddy teenagers, just clicking on the pictures and seeing how things change and following things through and ask questions. And these are people who are normally too busy to read a document, but they'll play with the dashboard and they'll go in and look at that. And Power BI does that beautifully and very inexpensively.
As you've climbed through the ranks in project management, when it comes to skills as a project manager, when it comes to perhaps those that are just starting in this space, that are considering a career in project management, and we have a great deal of listeners who are early stage career professionals. And the reason they subscribe is because they hear advice, recommendations directly from practitioners in that particular space. Georgia, if you were starting out today, given what you know now, what would be some of the advice and recommendations or series of advice that you would give to yourself?
You know, we talked about how I started in scheduling, mm-hmm. and a lot of people, you know, automatically run to Primavera or some of those scheduling tools out there, and they're thinking technology. Mm-hmm. But if that's where your focus is when you're starting out, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. What you really want to understand is how things work. So when I was in school, we learned how to actually draw out a PERT diagram and calculate how long a project was going to take. And sometimes it was pages and pages of notes and calculations to figure out how that was going to work. So when I got into the field and I started to use a tool, it was just learning how to use the tool, but not how to do a schedule. And the same thing is what's translated itself into the implementation of different systems. When we go in, a lot of times you'll have these large companies that are selling software. They don't understand what project manager is going through, what the processes is, what the work is, itself entails. They understand the application, but understanding what the process is and how to do it and having the ability to think critically, really looking at what the information is, or rather even just the data that's in front of you and being able to make sense of it and translate that into something that works is what the rare tool is, especially now with the popularization or the birth of AI, where those automated simple tasks where if you get something here and put it there can be done programmatically, that critical thinking component and the creativity that it takes to see the way something functions is actually the more important thing. So I would emphasize that they learn that and not worry about the application so much.
That's a great advice. Thank you for sharing that. The past couple of years, especially coming out of COVID, the war for talent and war on retention, I guess it has been pretty real. And I would imagine that's one of the challenges that you're probably experiencing within your current role or within the organization. And given the size of AECOM, you know, I would imagine it's still probably challenging to find top talent. Maybe share some of the practical strategies that have helped you, your team, or maybe your division to attract the top talent in the past couple of years.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it in light of COVID, because what I've noticed is that employers and people have found a new way to do business, and that's the remote team Zoom environment. Whereas I remember just months before COVID hit, you would mention to somebody that an employee needed to be able to work from home for that day. And there was a lot of pushback and a lot of feeling that they wouldn't get the work done. And I want to say, like, 3 months into COVID, I had clients calling me and saying, oh my goodness, y'all are much more effective remote. I didn't even know this was possible. How are you getting more work done sitting in your kitchen? And I'm like, well, they're not commuting for an hour and a half. They're more enthusiastic. Every time you have a meeting in person, you know, someone stops by the bathroom, they have a conversation by the water cooler, all of these sort of things get sort of filtered out. So some of it is learning in this new world to really take advantage of that, which means for companies, it means you can hire people who are brighter, smarter, faster, that aren't necessarily living nearby, that before were outside of your world. Mm-hmm. For the average person, it actually means you have to be your own boss a lot. That's exciting because nobody's watching you 24/7. But it also means if you fail, it's completely on you. Mm-hmm. You have to manage your work. You have to make sure you're effective and productive and you're learning and you're seeking out work when there's nothing to be done. So that whole new environment is something that moving forward can be much more leveraged than it is. And aside from that new component, the rest is the same as it's always been. Hire people who are competent, who are confident yet humble, so that they don't make dumb mistakes and are willing to learn, and that those skill sets are going to come in afterward. Even if they're not the most experienced, they have the right attitude, they'll learn.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to retaining the top talent in such a highly competitive environment, especially these days with companies being able to now hire remotely, you know, all over the globe, that increases the competition 10x with attracting the top talent, and retaining that top talent becomes even a greater challenge afterwards. Maybe share your thoughts on what are some of the strategies that really help you retain the top talent from some of the best resources on your teams.
Well, I suppose the way I've always done it is I've never actually tried to retain talent. You know, it's sort of that old perspective of the harder you hold on to something, you either squeeze the life out of it or it seeps through your fingertips. So I always focus on it more on helping those people that work with me become better at their jobs, to be happier, to help them grow and become better at their business. And just sort of, if I deal with them honestly and I tell them this is what these jobs pay and this is the kind of benefits we can offer, and that stuff is all in the up and up, but I'm also mentoring them and helping them and treating them like human beings with respect and with genuine interest on their lives and where they're going, they become lifelong friends. And even if for some reason I don't have the ability to retain them because I don't have a position that they can move into or their aspirations go somewhere, we always end up coming back into that same circle. So eventually they'll give me work on it because they become part of a client, or they facilitate something else for a com. So it's more about working well with those people in your vicinity and in your realm to make everyone better. And the rest takes care of itself. They end up working with me for years and years and years.
That's a great perspective on just the overall concept of retention. So thank you for sharing that. When it comes to structuring your interviews, which, you know, interviewing is a skill of its own that's very difficult to master. And I've been on different sides of the equation, being a candidate, being the hiring manager, being part of the staffing organization. So it's always fascinating for me to learn different strategies and, you know, the executive approach to interviewing. What are your thoughts on how to structure the most effective interviews that have worked really well for you personally? What are some of the maybe things to avoid? Maybe share the perspective on the interview process.
Yeah. So I've done interviews on behalf of clients that are with government agencies, and those tend to be very programmatic because you have to ask everyone the same question and listen to the answer, sort of grade them, and then ask the next person the same exact questions. And that has its merits because you can compare one to the other. But I've found that it's much more effective if less, instead of focusing on the questions, I'm actually listening to the person that I'm interviewing, and that the questions come from what they're saying, and I get to know them in that interview. So yes, I'm looking for competence, and some of the questions I have in mind beforehand, because I want to know, I'm asking technical questions to see if they know the answer. So to the person who knows it, they're wondering why they're getting this weird softball technical answer, but to the one that doesn't, they've just made it clear that they don't know. But the rest of it is getting to know them, understanding if they're going to fit well with the team, what kind of strengths they're going to bring and weaknesses, which are often different sides of the same coin. So along those lines, it's more about the listening and making sure that you're hiring who you think you're hiring, and you're getting answers about, and you're getting to know that person, not just getting patented answers that maybe they've thought about before for other customers or employers.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And when it comes to interviewing, at the end of the day, at least for me, structuring the conversation is more of a two-way street and giving the candidate an opportunity to make their own assessment as well, whether this is the, you know, type of leader under whom they can be successful under, or is this the right environment and the culture fit, which brings me to the further point. When it comes to, you know, creating that culture of innovation within the project teams or within your organization or within your department, share some of your strategies or thoughts around, you know, just building that culture of innovation, that continuous experimentation, ability to, you know, continuously improve the processes or anything that's around you. Curious to get your thoughts on that.
I found for me, because I tend to be very confident in my behavior and the way I talk, I'm assertive, mm-hmm. that it becomes really important early on for me to show weakness and to admit I don't know stuff and that I'm when I've made a mistake, because then we all sort of laugh about it and it's funny. And, you know, Georgia misspelled something yet again in an email, because that's who I am. And it sort of frees them up to show their warts and where they're struggling and they're having problems, and to understand that I'm not going to be upset if someone makes a mistake and they print it out, and then we're all going to sort of all hands on deck work to fix it together. We're not going to do that. Where I become less fun to work with is when someone tries to obfuscate or pretend they know something they don't, or they're not diligent in their work. They're trying to sort of play the system. Those kind of things is where I get, if I hire someone who turns out not to have as much experience and needs help, we get them there. We train them, we work in groups. I do this interesting thing now that we're all in remote areas of the world, is I have a standing meeting every day, which I call a huddle. And I will, in between meetings, I'll go and I'll sit in there and they can all just jump in, and we sort of work like we're in the same room and we collaborate and we throw up questions and people IM back and forth, so that they're not just looking to their supervisor, or I'm not looking to my supervisor for answers, but that I've built that collaboration where they all help each other. And that I find works really well.
You've brought up an interesting point on meetings and how you structure some of those stand-ups or the HUD meetings that you have. As a project manager, I view one of the skills or the traits of a successful PM is their ability to facilitate, plan, and coordinate very effective meetings. And we always hear meeting overload, and a lot of times we get that, you know, people dread just basically going to meetings. What is your overall approach to meetings? How do you structure them? How do you prepare for them? How do you make sure that you get the most value out of the, you know, people's time that's being used in some of these meetings?
The obvious things spring to mind. You know, you have an agenda, you bring in visuals to have people talk through so that you know what you're trying to accomplish in that meeting. But also not setting up meetings to talk about everything under the planet. You know, sometimes we hold meetings for the sake of meetings. So a lot of times I will opt to call someone and do an impromptu 15-minute thing. When it was in person, I'd just drop by their desk and sit. When it's on Teams, I'll IM them and maybe give them a call. But I try to leave meetings to things that require collaboration and conversation, not just for, say, to get a status. I can get a status from a report, but meetings I use more for collaboration, for trying to find a solution to a problem or to brainstorm a solution, or alternatively, like the huddle, where it's not a meeting at all, it's just a gathering place where everyone comes with whatever they need help with or want to work on at the moment.
That makes perfect sense. And we could probably spend the rest of the episode talking about this particular space, because there's, you know, different strategies, and it's always interesting to understand how people organize and just structure their meetings throughout the day. When it comes to just, you know, your content diet, the information that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself educated, keep yourself informed, from project management perspective, can you share some of the resources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself up to date on all the things that are going on in the industry?
Interestingly enough, it's not so much project management specific. I do have a PMP, so where the Project Management Institute, mm-hmm. to maintain that certification, I do have to listen to their seminars and watch those types of project management specific type items. But I've found over time the more useful things are the things I listen to outside of that. I remember early in my career, I listened, I'm referring to my new way of listening to books is what I do, is I'll download them, and I'm a mother of a four-year-old, so I don't have time to read, but I have time to listen while I do dishes. So I no longer read books, I listen to them. But back then, early on, before the birth of Audible, I read a book by Jack Caulfield called Success Principles. And I don't remember if that was part of a leadership program that I did, or it just happened to coincide with that time frame. But the book really gave a lot of insight as to how you can be successful, not just in your career, but in life, and how much power you have over your own destiny. And, you know, the right attitude to walk into a meeting with, the right attitude to take problems with. And I found that to be really helpful. And same thing with other books like that, that I've read over the years in the space of psychology or history. And believe Mattis wrote a book on warfare that I read that was interesting into how to deal with the team that didn't, management that didn't really want to do anything productive or something like that. So I think the more diverse you're reading, the more rounded you are as a human. And then therefore the better you do project management, because so much of that is managing humans.
Right, absolutely. And you technically answered the last question that I, you know, always ask the guests on the podcast, is around the book recommendation. So thank you for sharing that. We'll make the title and the link to the book available in the show notes. Georgia, as a closing question, share your thoughts on mentorship. Maybe who is your mentor or someone that inspires you, someone you admire, and why is that?
Mentorship. Well, the person I admired most my whole entire life was my mother. She worked hard. She was able to, you know, the example I gave earlier about management, mm-hmm. and where you take problems and mistakes with a sense of humor, that was my mom, or is my mom. She's still alive. She everything was always fun. So no matter how bad things got or what was going on, there was humor and fun involved. And I still take that with me to work. If we're having fun, then it's not a problem. If we can laugh at it, we've lived to fight another day. None of these things, at least fortunately, that I deal with are life and death. I'm sure there's other people who have careers where they are very much in that field. But for me, it's more about, you know, not spending money that we shouldn't on a project or meeting schedules and deadlines. So humor from her. And my first real boss coming out of my graduate degree, Diego Clavijo, is one of those people who is just so profoundly ethical and honest and contemplative in everything he does. And I remember early on, we used to just headbutt and headbutt and headbutt. But he was one of these people that if you told him you had a problem with something, he heard you. You know, he didn't just pay lip service. He actually listened to what the problem was, and he adjusted his behavior and his approach, which was awesome because he was my boss. He could have just pushed down and said, no, you're going to do this my way or the highway, or I'm right, or I'm older, or the 100 different things. But he would adjust his behavior, which made me want to emulate that and adjust my behavior. So I think, like, upfront that I've experienced in my own life, those are two people who I emulate in the way that I manage all the time.
Oh, that's super exciting, and definitely thank you for sharing that. And Georgia, I know it was a very short but insightful conversation, at least for me, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. I'm definitely looking forward to staying in touch with you and really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. And I'll throw out another book recommendation, since I accidentally answered two questions with one answer. I recently read a book by Nassim Taleb called Anti-Fragile, mm-hmm. which is less about having the right answers and more about being able to handle change and strife and chaos as it hits you. And that's a really interesting book and a very different perspective on how to handle not just project management, but your world at large. You know, you can't plan for every contingency. And just sort of the strength of character of that book was really interesting. So it might be a good read too.
Oh, that's great. Definitely appreciate that recommendation, and we'll definitely share that with our listeners. And thank you so much for your time today, George. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you. Do it again sometime.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.